It's kind of funny when you think about it. Many of the most rewarding travels I've had over the years have been when I've ventured to countries that my government didn't get along with, and sometimes didn't even want me to go to. Iran, Russia, Palestine, and Cuba. Well, I wouldn't visit either Iran or Russia right now. I think travel to Palestine and to Cuba can be very worthwhile. For a look at getting to Cuba, we're joined now by Christopher P. Baker. Chris grew up in Yorkshire, got a master's in Latin American studies in Liverpool, and has been exploring Cuba for the last 30 years. He's the author of the National Geographic Traveler Guidebook to Cuba and formerly wrote the Moon Guides to Cuba and Havana. His photographic books about Cuba include Mi Moto Fidel, Motorcycling Through Castro's Cuba. Chris joins us now from his home in Southern California.
Rick, it's a delight to be back with you.
You know, I've talked to so many people over the years who've hurdled the barriers that the United States government puts up between us and traveling to Cuba. They've gone there, and they've not only had good trips, but they've had uniquely inspiring experiences and some of the best travels of their lives. That was certainly my experience. And, of course, there is that issue of our government and our fear of communism and the legality of it all in visas. But first of all, what is it about Cuba that Americans are so romanced by? It's just amazing to me. People don't talk about other countries that way, but when you talk about Cuba, people just get all, you know, dewy-eyed and nostalgic.
Well, on one level, of course, there's this forbidden fruit aspect, but that is only a small portion of it. I think when people go to Cuba, having heard a lot of negatives over the decades about communist regimes and whatnot, they discover that Cuba is really an exciting place. It's full of passions, music, dance, arts that are, you know, the level of culture in Cuba is astonishing, and Cubans love Americans. Huh. There is, of course, this time warp element. This is, 1950s redux, the old American cars going down the street. There's nowhere quite like it. But I think the welcome reception that Cubans give Americans is really the biggest surprise of all.
And I think one interesting point is Americans think nobody can go there, but it's just our government. I mean, isn't Cuba a major destination for Canadians and Germans in the Caribbean?
Sure. They've been very badly hit by COVID and the tourism hasn't recovered, but they were getting more than 4 million tourists a year before COVID. And of course, the majority of those were Canadians, Europeans, but a considerable number of Americans, too.
You know, you've written several different guidebooks on Cuba, and I would imagine a lot of your guidebook sales are from outside of the United States.
For sure. That's the most important book I'm working on these days. It's now in fourth edition, I think, is my National Geographic Traveler Guidebook. Of course, that's published in French, Italian, a number of languages, and I constantly run into people in Havana and the rest of Cuba carrying those guidebooks.
So why is our government so hell-bent on making a visit complicated?
Well, we've got, six decades of, a Cuban-American community in Miami that is, for the most part, determined to keep that embargo in place. If it weren't for them, I think we would have seen the back end of the embargo a long time ago.
Okay, so that's kind of fascinating to me because it seems like old news, but it does go all the way back to when Castro took over. The dictator before was friendly to American business and government. Batista, he left the country. All of his cronies left the country. A lot of his elites had the wherewithal to leave the country because they didn't want to live in a communist nightmare, and they settled in Florida. So really, the basis of that goes way back to the 1950s, doesn't it, when the elites of Cuba fled the country and Castro and his gang took over.
Sure. And of course, in those early years after the revolution, there were a lot of people dispossessed, people lost businesses and whatnot. So there's a lot of bitterness in Miami amongst a good percentage of that population. And now they've risen to political power in not just Florida, but Washington, and they shape Washington's policy towards Cuba for electoral reasons. It's that simple.
Okay, let's get now into the nitty-gritty of an American wanting to go to Cuba. They've heard people like you rave about it. Their friend's friend went there and had a time of his life. How do we go? Is it easy? Is it complicated? Can you do it legally, or do you have to sneak in?
You used to have to sneak in, but now you can do it legally, thanks to Obama. Trump tightened the noose considerably, but one thing he did not do was shut the door totally on legal travel for every U.S. citizen. So there is one license category called Support for the Cuban People. Anybody can travel under that license. The good news is you don't have to ride away to the Treasury Department to request it. Right. It is a pre-approval. If you believe you're going to go to Cuba and support the Cuban people, then you can just book an airline ticket and go to Cuba.
So when I went, I remember there was different categories that you had to make an excuse for your visit. And as long as you chose one that made sense and you stuck with your story, you could do it.
Yeah, and that's what it is. You have to go for support for the Cuban people. And what does that mean? It means you literally you can't, under U.S. law since Trump, stay in a hotel. So you use a private B&B. And the private B&B scene has evolved remarkably. Rick, I know you've been to Cuba. What was it, a decade ago? But these days, the level of quality of B&Bs has risen to the level of boutique hotels.
All of my accommodations were short-term rentals, you know, Airbnb-type options, and they were all great.
Yeah, and these days, many of them are 10, 12, 15 rooms, superb places. But this is what support for the Cuban people is all about. You're supposed to stay in these B&Bs, use private restaurants, and in inverted commas, support the growth of an independent society.
Oh, I see. So we are contributing to their capitalistic infrastructure by going and patronizing these small businesses.
Right. And the end goal from Washington's perspective is that this takes on a political dimension and presumably fosters demands for political reform.
Well, that's great. So now, are there any dangers from our government or from theirs that we should be mindful of if we're going to make this dream of going to Cuba come true?
Well, certainly from the U.S. government's perspective, they're really not policing it on an individual travel level. You don't want to be staying at hotels, as I said, and then posting up on Facebook how you've been lazing on a beach at such and such a government-owned hotel. That will potentially get you into trouble.
Because I was coming back in through Houston, I guess, or Dallas, or wherever I was changing my plane, and I had my Cuban cigars. I just showed them to the customs guy. I said, don't you care about this? I'm coming back from Cuba, and I've got Cuban cigars. And he just says, get out of here.
Here's the bad news, Rick. Since Trump, there's a ban once more on Cuban cigars and rum. You may not come back to the States.
Oh, so you got to smoke them down there.
You got to smoke them and drink as much as you want down there.
Christopher P. Baker is updating us on American travel to Cuba right now on Travel with Rick Steves. He's a travel writer, photographer, tour leader, and cruise lecturer. The American Society of Travel Writers named him Travel Writer of the Year. Chris currently authors the National Geographic Traveler Guidebook to Cuba, as well as other titles on Costa Rica, Colombia, Panama, and the Dominican Republic. Chris also recommends day trip itineraries in his book, Perfect Day California. His website is ChristopherPBaker.com. Christopher, we're talking about the difficulties and the challenges of Americans getting in, and right now it seems like it's wide open. You run tours. I've always thought I'd love to do tours to places that are a little more complicated, but I don't know if I could even sleep knowing I had a tour coming up and I didn't know what these random government changes in policy would be. What kind of frustrations do you have when it comes to meeting a group that signed up for one of your tours in Havana and ready to take them? Is it smooth?
Well, really, none these days. Most of what I'm doing right now are photography tours. And of course, as you know, I've always been leading motorcycle tours, maybe once a year. But the photo tours are small groups, 7 people maximum for us in Cuba. We say to people, go in and advance a few days because anybody can choose to go in freely under the support for the Cuban people at any time they want. Take a little more time in Havana if you want, and then I arrive and we begin the tour, and it's all arranged for everybody. The venues that we're going to go to, all the transport, all the headache of arranging anything is already taken care of.
You know, when I'm thinking about Cuba, and I'm always thinking about us getting in, but also I'm curious about Cubans getting out. The American, if they talk to a Cuban in Florida, they might think that Cubans wish they could get out of that place. What is the general feeling among Cubans who live in Cuba? Is there a desire for people to leave? Are they free to leave? Can they go traveling as tourists?
Well, you've touched on almost a sore point because since 2013, when Raul Castro was president, they lifted all travel restrictions for Cubans. Every Cuban can get a passport. Many of my Cuban friends with money started traveling abroad just on vacations at that point. But with the collapse of tourism and the effect, in fact, of the whole economy, really, with COVID, the economic situation in Cuba is so desperate these days, it really is bad, that Cubans are leaving. They're looking for economic opportunity abroad. And because there is no longer a restriction for Cubans to leave Cuba, the exodus last year alone was more than 1.5% of the entire population
Wow.
left Cuba last year.
Would you say it's kind of a brain drain with well-educated people who could find employment? So that's double bad for the society.
Yeah, absolutely. There's one positive thing going on in Cuba, though, is that youthful people with access to money, and it's amazing where a lot of this money is coming from. It's not just family remittances, for example, from abroad, but a lot of younger people who are now becoming influencers in Instagram, etc., and believe it or not, with, you know, 250,000 following and actually earning money, they are investing their money. And so a lot of younger people are putting their money into restaurants and bars and other enterprises that are permitted in Cuba at an international par in terms of quality.
You know, Christopher, you just mentioned remittances, and I don't think a lot of Americans realize the importance of remittances. That means, the way I understand it, when somebody from a very poor country goes to a wealthy country and does the gardening and the kind of work that immigrants typically do when they visit a country north of the border, they work really hard, they live frugally, and they are ethically obligated, really, to send money back to their loved ones who are stuck in that bad economy. In some countries in Latin America, 25% of the GDP is from remittances from the United States. When we pay for somebody from south of the border to do work for us, a lot of that money is supporting people back home, and it helps them make ends meet back home without having to go north.
Correct. And Cuba, before COVID, was getting about $4 billion a year from remittances, mostly from the USA. Before Trump, I should say, because Trump banned it.
Yeah.
So that was a body blow to Cuba.
You know, you don't see Western Union offices on every street corner in where we live, but that is a big deal south of the border, because that's where mom goes to get her money every month from her son.
And believe it or not, in Cuba, Western Union were everywhere. Then Trump put a ban on these wire remittances. And Biden has kept in place a lot of Trump's restrictions on travel and trading with Cuba, but he did lift that restriction on remittances, and Western Union just last month returned to Cuba.
Wow. We're updating our notes to travel to Cuba right now with Christopher P. Baker. Chris writes the National Geographic Traveler Guidebook to Cuba. He leads photography and motorcycle tours around Cuba, and you'll find links to his work with this week's show at ricksteves.com/radio. Christopher, what is the reality of today's brand of communism in Cuba? Is it just a sham that's actually capitalistic now, or is it still doggedly hanging on to that sort of ideal of people's revolution and equitable society?
It's a mixed plate. Formally, the Cuban government is clinging to its revolutionary zeal. The Cuban economy is messed up. The Cubans, communists, would have done a good job of messing up the economy without the U.S. embargo. But the trouble is that there is still an embargo in place that has been devastating. Mm-hmm. The whole embargo has always been intended to stop the rest of the world trading with Cuba. So you have this problem of a domestic economy that is really dysfunctional at the very best, I can say. But there is these portals that have been opened by the state to permit private enterprise. And in fact, last year, private businesses as corporations were permitted for the first time with up to 100 employees. And people are taking advantage of it. Most of the private enterprise at this stage is much smaller scale than that, but the potentials do exist.
So there's evolution going on, a slow evolution towards capitalism, it sounds like, but on the terms of the Cuban government.
Yeah, I mean, it's three steps forward, two back. Yeah. It's nowhere near at the pace that we saw in China and Vietnam, et cetera.
You know, I used to kind of marvel at how so many people were just determined to see the Cuban economy as a mess and then forgive the Honduran economy. But when you look at they're both at the same latitude, basically. One is capitalism gone wild and the other one is communism. And if you looked at it, they're both about the same. But in Cuba, you'd have less crime and a little more equity. And in Honduras, you'd have more crime and a bigger gap between poor people and rich people. But overall, the GDP was about the same. Cuba is saddled with the American embargo that makes their tough life even tougher. And Honduras is saddled with a lot of gang problems and corruption in their world. How would you compare the realities of a miserable capitalistic situation in a country like Honduras and a miserable communist situation in a country like Cuba?
Well, I, as a journalist, try to see the good and bad kind of in equal measure. I need to find where the balance lies. And it is easy to be entirely negative about the revolution and the communist system. I am not going to do that. I have seen so much good that has come from that revolution, especially in terms of healthcare, which is right now under extreme stress in Cuba. Education levels, fantastic. I mean, it's the first country in the Western Hemisphere, the only one, to eradicate illiteracy entirely. Did that at an early stage. So, and of course, they did tremendous things in resolving as much as possible the racial problems that a lot of people in Miami refuse to acknowledge. They just don't acknowledge it.
Right. So it's an interesting opportunity to travel down there. And when we do travel to Cuba, it's an educational experience, any way you cut it. It's such an eye-opener, I think.
Sure. And I think for most people that I've ever taken there, I've done more than 100, well over 100 tours that I've taken. It's a 98% I love this place reaction. It really bowls people over in the very many ways that it surprises them and in which it endears itself to them.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Christopher P. Baker. He writes the National Geographic Traveler Guidebook to Cuba. Chris's website is ChristopherPBaker.com. Chris, over the years, you've led countless Americans around Cuba, either on your photography tours or on their motorcycles. What's the most gratifying thing for you as a person who cares about Cuba and who cares about the American global perspective?
It's undoubtedly when Americans come to understand that Cuba has so many positives. The Cuban people don't represent the governmental system as such, and they say to me, my God, this was the most rewarding trip I've ever taken.
You know, you hit on something that was my takeaway from Cuba, and it was there's no animosity, there's no anger, there's no edge to the Cuban people. When I was traveling in Cuba, I splurged for a local guide. I hired a guide. I think it was $100 a day I paid for a local guide, which is a crazy amount of money for a Cuban. And we had our friend and our sidekick for 4 days in a row. It was wonderful for the four of us. And everywhere we went, we met Cubans who were joyful, Cubans who could have a party just by opening a bottle of rum and passing it around. It was New Year's Eve. We knew we had the fallback of going to a fancy hotel's rooftop. But I told my family, I bet if we walk through a neighborhood, we'll get invited into a party. And we were. And it was the greatest party. And they said, what do you want to drink? And I said, a beer. And they said, all we have is rum. And it was great. It was probably the happiest New Year's Eve I can remember. And I was so thankful to have done that with my family. And I was so thankful to be able to take that home as my favorite souvenir. Christopher P. Baker, thanks for all the work you do with introducing Americans to Cuba, and best wishes as these two countries learn to live together.
Thank you so much, Rick. Son tres palabras solamente, mis angustias, y esas palabras son
como me gustas. Up next, it's part two with our Travel with Rick Steves listeners about what it's been like to get back to traveling again. We're at 877-333-RICK, and by email, it's radio@ricksteves.com. We'll be right back.